Thanks for being here, and thanks for staying despite the typhoon. I lead a project called the Open Money Initiative, and today we're going to leave behind a little bit for this talk, for these 20 minutes, these very technical talk, these very technical keywords, and we're going to go back to basics, to why this technology matters, and how do we help the people that need it the most. So I want to introduce you to Lorena, who is a baker, 48-year-old. She's from Venezuela, the country where I'm from, and she, in order to get her money out and in order to herself escape from poverty, scarcity, she needed to convert her savings into US dollars, which she did by using the black markets, back when it was illegal and dangerous. And after that, she needed to fold the bills into her hair so she could cross the border safely, because the border between Colombia and Venezuela is very dangerous. The guards are very corrupt, and they're just looking for any way to make income, because the guards are, as any Venezuelan, living through a very difficult situation of economic collapse and hyperinflation, as you may know. So at the Open Money Initiative, we research how people use money in closed economies and collapsing monetary systems. And this year, we focused on my home country, Venezuela. And we did some what people call design research. We borrow this approach from IDEO, who's one of our partners and collaborators. We try to go to the places where these people live. We observe them. We set up different research methodology to collect qualitative data that tells us a lot about why people do what they do, how people do what they do. And we go beyond the statistics of this 1,000,000% inflation or whatever, and really look at the human experience of what that is like. And so you can think of it as a process of search more than research. We are searching for inspiration for products that could help these people be more resilient and better prepared for calamity. So our methods vary depending on what our goals are. This year and this for this project, we did ethnographic interviews, which means we sit down with people, we talk with them for about 2 hours, and we try to get them to open up. And money is a very difficult topic and subject to get people to open up about. So we present them with some emotional cards, and we try to like get them to get acquainted with us and establish some rapport. And so we did some interviews in person in Colombia, and we did some interviews remotely because we unfortunately couldn't enter Venezuela for this time around. It's a long story. And we also did a diary studies. We wanted to know what people's experience was like day to day, and we followed people during a week. And these people were located in Venezuela. Thankfully, WhatsApp works, and it's possible to run a study still like this. And then we did what we call displacements, which are ways that we could tell people, hey, you know, for example, here's some Bitcoin, use it to buy something and tell us what you did. And of course, this is not to really get at the ways that people would be using Bitcoin ordinarily, because it's a very rough intervention, but it's more about getting to know what is difficult about these technologies and how do we overcome that and get inspiration for that. And so the process in the end looks a lot like this. We have a lot of post-its from all the different interviews. We try to sort them, organize them, and try to detect patterns in the data. And so I'm going to run quickly, because this presentation is supposed to be 45 minutes, but I'm going to try to run quickly through the main themes where we organized our research insights on. So first is about confidence. In Venezuela, networks of people have replaced the roles of companies and institutions, which means the state and the companies are no longer operating or they are diminished in their way that they are operating. So what is the fallback in those cases is you go and trust your neighbors, or you trust your extended family, or you go to the internet and go to websites that replace the need or replace the use that you have for traditional institutions. So for example, instead of exchanging money by going to a bank, the way you do it is you go to Facebook or Instagram and search for places that offer this informal service of remitting and transferring money abroad. And then, yeah, like this, here we see an example of, this is a money changer who lives in Medellin, and every day he prepares these images and sends them to their, his entire network, because he works as a money changer. And one of the few ways that you can earn money in foreign currency in Venezuela is by doing a currency exchange. So his sister, in this case, lives in Venezuela, and she collaborates with him so they can get money moving from one country to another. And this, by the way, does not involve cryptocurrency in any way. I'm going to be talking a lot about how people use money in general and a little bit about cryptocurrency, because we did encounter some use of that. And then, you know, this is another example. People use these, like, the feature of WhatsApp that is like Instagram stories to advertise their services, sending and receiving money. Because the thing is, if you are in a normal country, like Japan, like the US, UK, you can send money by just going to a bank and saying, oh, I want to wire money to this bank. And, you know, the corresponding banking system is complicated, clunky, has a lot of fees, whatever, but it works. In Venezuela, this system doesn't work because the government doesn't allow banks to talk to banks outside. We've had these sort of capital controls for about 20 years. So the way that you do it is, if you want to convert your money to money abroad, you have to find someone that has a bank account in the other country, and you need to send him money first and then receive the money on the other side. And this, of course, is prone to scams and abuse, and which we'll see. So this leads me to the second one. In Venezuela, every transaction is forced to feel like a drug deal. Everything's kind of underground. Here I'm trying to send money to a foundation in Venezuela, and I'm in Colombia, and sitting in this booth. This guy is telling me, hey, you have to WhatsApp this number, and he will let you know when the transaction is cleared. And everything's like, it's kind of like doing drug deals. It's like doing you know, very shady. It feels, you know, that you have to trust somebody, and there's a lot of scams. Something that we found that was kind of unexpected, at least for me, was that despite scarcity and economic collapse, some people are thriving. You would think Venezuela is a country that has impoverished so quickly that everyone must be, you know, suffering. But in fact, hyperinflation has made some millionaires, because if you are well-connected, like this guy we talked to, Guillermo, he was able to get a loan issued in bolivars, and he bought an apartment in New York City with that loan. And then since the loan was in bolivars, he was able to repay it the next year. It was $1 million loan, and he paid it with $20,000, because the value of the loan just collapsed, right? So there's people that can game this system and can get huge benefits. And so that tells you that the system, the economic system that in Venezuela they're trying to impose, actually elevates the levels of inequality rather than making things more equal, which is really terrible. And we also see people trying to take advantage of others by scams, you know, like this pyramid scheme type things, where cryptocurrency is sometimes used because it's the easiest way to move money kind of in the shadow banking system. Like these people tell us that they don't see themselves as scammers. They just see themselves as financial innovators. But if you look at the way that they're operating, it's probably not sustainable. And so the most vulnerable, here we interviewed this 6-year-old lady who was about to fall for one of these scams. And it's very common that the people that don't know or that are not very financially literate are falling for these things. So this happens in a situation of uncertainty and economic collapse, when people's ways to earn money are diminished. I'm going to go to resilient. So Venezuelans have to endure constant swings between modern and primitive existences. Sometimes you are having a perfectly normal afternoon or a perfectly normal day. You go to work, you have electricity, you have internet. It looks like same things are normal. But then it's like the typhoon that's going to hit, that hopefully will not hit. You know, everything might just, you know, we might lose power, we might lose internet. These things happen in Venezuela so frequently that it's impossible to plan in advance. Sometimes if you have to take your kid to the daycare, and then daycare doesn't have electricity, and they can't take care of him for you, then you have to stay at home, and then you can go to work. So these things pile on top of each other and make like a domino effect. So this is something like that's very important to take into account when you're designing for our product or products for people like this, right? And of course, it makes it very challenging. Income from the informal economy often eclipses paid salaries. So we interviewed this career woman who is a professor at the university, tenure professor at the university, and she spends her days doing tasks that are way below her level of ability because she makes more money doing that than at her job as a university professor, for example. And this is not the only time that we've encountered this. We also talk to people who work as drivers, doctors who have also as taxi drivers. And if you notice, it's very similar to what happened in Cuba. Any profession or any occupation that interfaces with the outside world that is able to earn hard currency is then valued more, and because you can earn more money in it, and then you do your job as part of like your role in society. If you're a teacher, if you're a doctor, then you also have to have enough for your family to eat, so you need to take on these two jobs. Leaving Venezuela is going from a sinking ship to a life of a few provisions. This we got, especially because we focused in Colombia, and we noticed like that there was a lot of migrants coming. We spoke with a lot of migrants. People have this expectation that when they leave Venezuela, everything will be all right. But when they find themselves in a new country, they don't have their support systems, and as I mentioned, the institutions probably don't work for them because maybe they don't have papers, maybe they can't get a bank account. So this is something that I could take into account. And then lastly, this is my favorite category, open. Nobody wants the Bolivar, but it's necessary to survive. So as you can see, the Bolivar is only useful now to make the home decorations and things like these, and they're beautiful, but it's also a sign of the tragedy that's occurring, right? And then, you might think, oh, well, no one's using the Bolivar, like, because who would use such a worthless currency? But in fact, it is the currency that is most widely distributed. And then if that's what people have to trade, it will take a long time for it to be replaced by something a lot more convenient, like, say, DAI or, say, the US dollar in cash. Even though it's making inroads, especially US dollars in cash are making big inroads in Venezuela, it takes a long time for local currencies to be replaced. When someone is selling a product, they have the power to choose how they get paid. They have that like asymmetry of power, right? So, for example, we spoke with this guy who was trying to find medicine for his mom, and he didn't have Zelle, which is an interbank transfer platform in the United States. It's very popular in Venezuela because there still are many people who have, not many, but there's thousands of people who have bank accounts in the US and have registered for Zelle. So, this guy didn't have access to that, and the medicine that he was supposed to purchase required that. Like the guy who sold the medicine was like, okay, you will give me the money in Zelle, or else I won't sell you the medicine, which is kind of terrible for him. But eventually, he was able to find an uncle that could lend his account to him. Keep those things in mind. It's just mind blowing, right? When you live in Venezuela, there's no good way to save. There's no ideal way to save. So what we noticed was we spoke with three different people that had different approaches, but you'll notice that none of these approaches are actually ideal. So we spoke with one very bright student who got into mining Bitcoin and saved her money in Bitcoin. Of course, it's volatile, but she preferred it to having US dollars because she could pull it out at any time, because it turns out that local Bitcoins is the most liquid, the most convenient way to convert from a foreign currency, if you consider Bitcoin a foreign currency, to Bolivars. If you keep your money there, in a matter of 5 minutes, you can get the money in your bank account and you can pay for things, which is really amazing. Then there's people that save money in dollars in cash, but then it is unsafe. So if you have someone that can keep the money for you, especially if you live in an area where it's more unsafe, then you try to keep the money there. And then we are starting to see digital money platforms being used. So there's a company called RTM and Uphold that are like enabling these kinds of services. They're not using cryptocurrency quite yet, and some of these are still in its infancies. They have to become better at being mobile first and so on. So the government actually blocked RTM from operating, but it's a very simple block to bypass. So people need to have VPNs to access these some of these services. And if you made a mobile app that like would bypass them, people wouldn't need to use VPNs. In fact, most people don't know how to use VPN. So as long as that is the situation, then this will not reach, you know, mass usage. So I want to talk quickly about opportunity areas. We want to enable access. And I'm going to also go into the three ways that we, the hierarchy that we established, right? Confident. So we often say that you should make products in the crypto space that avoid having trust. We challenge that, and we would say try to leverage the trust that is already existing between people, right? So what if, for example, you had, so these are product ideas that like are provocations from the research that we have. So what if you had, for example, a program where there are digital banking ambassadors that would onboard people onto using some digital money platforms, and you know, the most tech-savvy person in the community could tell the others, you know, this is how you would be able to load up money and use these kinds of money systems. In resilient category, we need to ensure consistent access to our systems, even under bad infrastructure. So what if there's a way that we could enable offline mobile transfers, even if it doesn't turn out to be extremely censorship resistant or extremely double spend resistant? Because people often transact with people that they're going to transact with again. So it is in their best interest not to cheat the system in most cases. Crypto bills, I saw there are some crypto bills floating around this conference as well, so this is like nice to see. So it's some kind of a similar idea, kind of a bill where you can verify that, you know, the private key has the money, and then you can like just use it as if it were a bill of foreign currency. And then open, we want these services to be accessible to everyone in practice and not just in theory. So if you had, for example, a USD wallet that you could cash in and out very easily, that doesn't exist yet. And USD wallet, it can be a stablecoin, it can be, you know, it doesn't have to be crypto, although we would very much prefer if it were, right? Money changer multiplier. So we noticed that one of the things that people do to earn money in Venezuela is to be money changers, to be able to exchange money from one system to another, and they earn some money, hopefully in the good currency. So what if we trained a lot of people to become more nodes in this network of money changing, and then we did it in a way that was safe for people to interact? Universal point of sale system. So if there was a way for people to pay in the mechanism of payment that is required of them, and for example, this guy that had to pay with Zelle wouldn't have been in such a rush to find the way to pay, because there could be a way for him to convert, you know, if he had dollars in cash, there could be a way, for example, to convert to other currencies. And then if we could have joint crypto accounts, if you have a family member that knows a little bit more about crypto and is in Colombia, for example, you wouldn't even need to send the money if you share an account, and you could load it up in one country and then you could use it in another, and that could be interesting as well. So I want to quickly, because I don't have that much time, introduce a new crop of useful products that we've found since we did this research. So Coinbase just released their wallet, the light version of the wallet, and Give Crypto is actually giving out cryptocurrency to people that need it, and they're running some pilot programs, which is interesting. There is a new framework for open source wallets that are running on all low versions of Android, which was not, like, this didn't exist before. This is like now open source. I'm going to present this in Room D in a few minutes as well. There's a company called Reserve that's actually allowing people to buy and sell dollars, digital dollars, and they have a stablecoin. So they are allowing people to do that with their bank accounts in Venezuela, and they have a very seamless and very easy to use application for that, which is great. And then there's a company called Value that's allowing people to send money from Colombia to Venezuela, and they're solving a huge problem for the 1.5 million migrants that are in Colombia. Perhaps they could integrate some of these ideas to, for example, instead of sending the money to a bank account in Venezuela, they could send the money to a wallet and it would stay in dollars. That would be super cool as well. So some quick takeaways for builders. I want us to focus on what is useful, because there's a lot of focus on what is usable and usability. It's a great conversation to have, the UX audits, the design track, it's all cool. But I want us to focus on, you know, things that are actually very, very useful rather than just usable. And then I would challenge, you know, the idea that we all need to work towards mass adoption. And I would push us to go and work for products that some people really, really need. And it's easier to focus, in solving a local problem, a smaller problem. And I want to just, I want us to think, where is money restricted? Where are there places where we could conduct this research and we could get, inspiring results and inspiring new products? So thank you. These are our sponsors. And please follow us on Twitter.